both the first time and about 28 years later. So we'll read first in Genesis chapter 28. We're not going to deal with Bethel, we did that last week. We're going to go on from there. Genesis 28, and we'll just read from verse 12 to get the picture. Jacob's sleeping, he's got a stone for a pillow, and he dreamed, and behold, a ladder set up on the earth, and the top of it reached to heaven, and behold, the angels of God ascending and descending on it. And behold, the Lord stood above it and said, I am the Lord God, that's a plural word, Elohim. I am the Lord God of Abraham thy father, and the God of Isaac, the land whereon thou liest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed, and thy seed shall be as the dust of the earth, and thou shalt spread abroad to the west, and to the east, and to the north, and to the south, and in thee, and in thy seed, shall all the families of the earth be blessed. And behold, I am with thee, and will keep thee in all places. It's not really, the word places is not really there. I will keep thee in all whither thou goest. So at all times he's going to be with him. And will bring thee again into this land, for I will not leave thee until I have done that which I have spoken of thee. Chapter 35. Verse 9. And God appeared unto Jacob again when he came out of Paddan Aram and blessed him. And God said unto him, thy name is Jacob. Thy name shall not be called any more Jacob, but Israel. And that's the word for a prince with God. Jacob is the supplanter, he who catcheth by the heel. And it actually, in the root word is not a good word for Jacob. It's crooked, it's deceitful. That's what it means. But it was given because he caught by the heel. But of course it has many other nuances in the word. And he called his name Israel, a prince with God. And God said unto him, I am God Almighty. And that's the great word that God used with Abraham, El Shaddai. I am the Almighty God. Be fruitful and multiply, a nation and a company of nations shall be of thee or from thee, and kings shall come out of thy loins, and the land which I gave Abraham and Isaac, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed after thee will I give the land. And God went up from him in the place where he talked with him. Now I want just to draw your attention to Romans chapter 9. There's a number of New Testament passages, but time doesn't permit us to do anything. But I just want to bring to your attention Romans chapter 9. And we'll read the contextual verses, because I think it's important. Verse 9 and 9. For this is the word of promise, at this time will I come, and Sarah shall have a son. There's a promise of God concerning a son for Sarah. And not only this, but when Rebekah, that's Isaac's wife, that's the son that was promised, the child of promise, when his wife hath conceived by one even by her father Isaac, for the children being not yet born, neither having done any good or evil, that the purposes of God according to election might stand, not of works, but of him that calleth, it was said unto her, the elder shall serve the younger. And then there's a quotation from Malachi, as it is written, Jacob have I loved, but Esau have I hated. Now we trust God will bless to us the reading of his precious word. I had a senior moment last week, and I tried to remember this. It just came to me, and I'm just showing you. I think it's lovely. I've got a copy here, so I don't have to look there. This was the little poem I was trying to remember. But you read it. Just take a moment and read it. I'll read it out. God hath not promised skies always blue, flowers strewn pathways all our lives through. God hath not promised sun without rain, joy without sorrow, peace without pain. God hath not promised, we shall not know, toil and temptation, trouble and woe. He hath not told us, we shall not bear many a burden, many a care. God hath not promised smooth roads and wide, swift easy travel needing no guide, never a mountain rocky and steep, never a river turbid and deep, but God hath promised strength for the day, rest for the labor, light for the way, grace for the trials, help from above, unfailing kindness, undying love. Is that Jacob? Is that what I just read? As God gives a promise to Jacob when he's 77 years old. 28 years later, he gives a promise and it's even greater. Kings will come out of your loins. He's expanded it. The man who at 77 or 76 years old recognized he was in the house of God, came back to it a changed man, a man who had learned God. Jacob came into the house of God, a man who needed to know something of God, not a perfect man, by no means. A man who had committed a grievous sin. The house of God was the place that would change Jacob. Robert Thompson said to me a while back, said there are many come into the house of God and they want to change the house of God to suit them. But what the house of God, and you understand, I'm putting the article in, although the article is not there in house of God. What the house of God should be is a place that should change you and I. Because it's a dreadful place. For God is in this place. So Jacob's going to leave Paddan Aram. We're going to go for a walk with him. The distance that Jacob went, Jacob is leaving Beersheba. Oh, that's the wrong one. It's not on that one. Do you see Beersheba in there? I don't. On there? There we are. We're good enough. Too low? Is that better? Okay, thank you. Jacob's leaving Beersheba. He's going to make his way. This is not the one about every place on it I want. He's going to make his way up to Bethel, then away further up into Syria, and the distance, depending on who the authority is, from 400 to 550 miles. He says to Pharaoh in Egypt that, he says to his wife, she came out with nothing but a staff. Now there's something doesn't seem right in this picture. Isaac, when your father wanted a bride for you, what did he do? Did he send you to Haran to get a bride? No, he didn't. He kept you at home. He sent his trusted steward, who went with wealth, who went with promise, who went with authority to get a bride for Isaac. But things are not right in this dysfunctional family. And Rebecca, using her guile, persuades Isaac that Jacob should go to Haran to get his own bride. Now I want you just to, you don't have to use imagination for this, you've only got to use events. If Isaac had followed the pattern established by his father and sent a steward to get a bride for Jacob, who would he have came back with? Yes, he would have. He would have came back with Leah. And I told you last week, Robert wasn't here, told me a long time that God's mind for Jacob was Leah. And there's six sons and a daughter out of Leah. And they're the six sons, out of whom comes the leadership of the tribe, out of whom comes the priesthood of the tribe. And only out of Rachel do we find in Joseph the double portion. And I can see if he had been sent and coming back with the bride would be Leah. And she would have produced 12 sons and one daughter. She missed out on 6 sons. I don't know. But he wouldn't have had 4 wives. And after you read the book of Genesis and about what happened at Padan Aram, I rest assured there is no way I want more than one wife. So up goes Jacob up to Padan Aram. He's going up. I'm going to go back to that other slide again because I've got the places on it I want. So he's going away up here. I'm not worried about that just now. Up in Padan Aram, he comes to the well. And there's 3 flocks by the well. And there's some shepherds and they're not doing anything. And he says, isn't it time to water the flocks? See, Jacob was a shepherd. And I would judge that he was one of the best shepherds. Laban says to him, well, Jacob says to Laban, he says, when I came to you, you didn't have much. You didn't have big flocks. You were not a rich man. And Laban, trying to keep Jacob there, he says, I have learned by experience that God's blessed me through you. And actually, the word experience there is not like we use experience. It's actually the word used for witchcraft, for divination. And remember that Rachel stole the teraphim that were used for divination. We'll speak about that. Jacob was a man who knew all the arts of the shepherd. He was a strong man. The shepherds that were there were probably young boys, because that was generally the task given to the young boys in the family. And obviously, Laban's sons were not yet grown up, and the task of looking after the sheep were given to the daughters. And so it's Rachel that comes out with the flock to the well. And Jacob, he lifts the stone from the mouth of the well that the flocks might be watered. Now, just in case you don't understand how they did it in those days, they had gutters, troughs, running away from the well. And they would dip the bucket into the well, bring it up, pour it into the trough. How do I know that? Because that's where Jacob put the rods when he was breeding the sheep. That's how they were fed. It'd be really impossible to feed a few thousand sheep with one bucket, just letting them all get a drink each. So there's these wooden troughs that they had made, or clay, I don't know what they were. And the water would be poured in, and all the sheep would eat. So there are 4 flocks of sheep going to drink at this water. So Jacob's able to uncover the well. Wells were covered in those days, so the unwary people might not fall in. You know, it's incumbent upon us, there's a little principle for us, that we might not cause others to stumble. We have to be careful, and we have to provide protection. So Jacob meets Rachel. And the upshot is, he lands up going back, and his father welcomes him. He hasn't seen anyone from Abraham's side for a long time. Jacob is 77 years old. He's a son of Isaac. And Isaac's, Abraham's servant, came to get Rebecca. So many years have passed, and I don't know the communication between the families. And he welcomes him into his family. No doubt at this time his own sons are young. Remember, it was 20 years he was in Laban's house. And just to give you an idea of how age worked, Simeon and Levi were probably in their late teens when they slew the people of Shechem. They were not children and they were not grown men, but young men in that age, in the 19, 20 years old, well, it was 20 and over that went to battle, remember, for Israel. There comes a stage in a man's life when he comes from boyhood into manhood, and there's a normal development and growth seen in men and women. And so it should be in the house of God, among the people of God. There should be a development. There should be a growth seen in them. And so they decide it's time he gets a wife. But Abraham's servant, he had a dowry. He had jewels. He had everything to hand over. Jacob had nothing. He had a staff. And so the deal is made, and I think it was a pretty good deal on Laban's side, 7 years for a bride. I don't know if some of you young boys would pay over 7 years' wages for your wife. Daniel's smiling here. You would, eh? Righto, it's done. I'll tell Henry. He'll work for him for 7 years on that little plantation. So that's what he landed up with. 7 years of his life, he would get food and keep. That would be it. And he would work for Laban. And so Jacob applied the skills of the shepherd. When I was a boy and growing up, I had the picture of Jacob was not the Bible picture. It was what men paint. I want you to look at what the Bible says about Jacob. It comes in Jacob's complaint to Laban. Night and day he was out in the fields with the flock. If anyone was killed or stolen, Jacob bore the cost of it. Now some of you work for an employer. Just think, if your employer gives you a pencil and you break it, you have to buy a new one. If the computer breaks down, you have to pay for the repairs. Jacob got absolutely nothing with respect to looking after the flock. It was all his responsibility, and he never complained. I think Jacob's a wonderful man. I'm sorry, there are some of my brethren don't seem to like him at all. I read an article, a brother, the other day, and he was speaking about Jacob at the watering troughs with the flocks being bred. And he says, Jacob's applying his craftiness. And the next line, he says, he did what God had showed him with regard to the ring-straked animals. Well, excuse me. If God shows you to do something and you do it, I call it obedience, not craftiness. And please, brethren, I'm not going to say it too much. I'm not trying to defend Jacob. The Bible does that. Don't apply to men and women and others what others say about them. There's too many wrong impressions upon our brethren because someone doesn't like someone or says something against them and it catches. Try and look upon each brother and sister as individuals. Accept them as they are and see what God has made them. And so Jacob, night and day, the heat, the sun, the wild animals, the robbers, the frost, he's out there for 7 years looking after the flock. And the day comes, I'm going to get my bride. Hey, some of you married men, now do you remember that day? Jim Webb got me in the basement tailor side, and I had an option to go one way or the other. Upstairs was to get married. Out the back door was freedom. No, it wasn't freedom. It was my wife's here. Better watch. I could be in trouble. Listen, it's a day you anticipate, isn't it? So here they have their feasting. They have their marriage, whatever they did. And he wakes up in the morning. You know the last thing Jacob did at home? He deceived the father who was blind. And Isaac woke up the next day and he recognized that the wrong son had received the blessing. Jacob woke up in the morning and he realized that probably through wine and strong drink, he wasn't able to recognize who he was consummating the marriage with. He woke up in the morning and it was Leah. It was not Rebecca. He deceived his father who was blind. And in probably the blindness of drunkenness, Laban deceived him. You see how the wheels turn? God never says a thing to him about his action away back in Beersheba. But God's going to bring the wheels of justice slowly round. You'll notice in my notes, I point out to you that Jacob, who deceived his brother, stole his birthright, who deceived his father, received the blessing falsely, was deceived by his father-in-law, not only with respect to the bride, but his wages were changed 10 times. He was deceived by his son Reuben. His 2 boys, Simeon and Levi, deceived him and murdered a whole city. His boys deceived him just after his wife Rachel died, and they sold Joseph into slavery. On and on and on it went. He was paying the price for what he did. And that's how God works. But what God doesn't do, and I want you to listen to this, I'm reiterating what I say. He doesn't go on and bring up the past, but there will be a price to pay. For you will reap what you sow. That's Galatians. You will reap what you sow. Some men's sins are open beforehand. This is Paul to Timothy. Some men's sins are open beforehand going to judgment, and others follow after. And so here's Jacob. This is not right. Now the Bible tells us that Jacob loved Rachel, but he did not love Leah. And a few years later, Leah saw that she was hated. What a tragedy in a household. So here's each woman with her handmaid under divided families. In fact, I'm not going to go into the details. There's terrible scenes of inter-family problems come up between the two wives and the relationship with the handmaids. The upshot is that Jacob served 7 years, then comes the marriage day to his disappointment. About two weeks later, he's finally given Rebekah, and he works another 7 years for her. 14 years, he builds up Laban's flocks. But the first 7 years seemed as if a few days, because of his love for Rebekah. Have you ever noticed that? When it's something that you really want to do, when your heart is in it, or you're anticipating it, time seems to fly. Doesn't take long. But if you're being tortured, time goes very slowly. If it's something you hate doing, it's something you don't want to happen, time can go very, very slowly. And so the first 7 years in Jacob's experience with Laban went very fast. Jacob had been promised almost the whole earth. What does he find himself doing? The boy who came from a very rich household finds himself as a bondservant in the house of Laban for 20 years. 14 at least as a straight servant. The last 6 he earned wages. That's the wheels of justice that go round slowly. The promises of God were never fully completed in Jacob himself. He never saw a king. He bought a little piece of land down by Succoth, and he never really saw much. He told Joseph in Genesis 48, he says, I took a piece of land out of the hand of the Amorites with my sword and with my bow, that's yours. But he never really had much, he never owned much. The promises of God were in him, but they were in his loins. They were in his family, they were in his sons and his sons' sons. Now we come to the time when Jacob gets a lot of trouble. They make a deal. All the marked animals, Jacob says, will be mine. All the striped and all the rest of it goes through the whole thing. Generally, there'd be a pure black or a pure white. So all the pure animals would be Laban's. All the animals with marks on the hide would be Jacob's. But just to make sure everything's right, he says to Laban, you take all the ones that are marked already. So it wasn't a phenomena that they would be marked. There were already marked animals there. And it doesn't give us a percentage that were taken away 3 days' journey by his sons. So Jacob's left with pure black and pure white animals, sheep and goats. And as he breeds them, all the marked ones will be his. Now, just before he leaves Laban, 6 years later, he reveals to his wives, the two of them in the field, that he had a vision. And the vision was concerning the rams leaping upon the marked animals. So God showed him something about the marked animals. Furthermore, I personally believe that Jacob had an understanding from God as to genetics. Now you will appreciate when we come to the tabernacle that God gave men an understanding of working with metals that they never knew before. They never learned at the school of men. You know, God is unchanged today. That's what we call spiritual gifts. God, through the Spirit, fits men and women to do a work for Him that they never trained at the hand of man to do. Something they're not doing naturally, and they're able to do it. People who could never stand up and speak publicly naturally, and they're doing it. People who were not natural students, and they're able to study the Bible and get an understanding of it. People who could never have in their heart to go and help others, and to spend their life going out helping others. And I believe that God fitted Jacob with an understanding of genetics that men are only beginning to realize something of it today. And he applied those principles. Now, putting the peeled rods in the water troughs, I don't know, and no one seems to know what it did, whether it encouraged the animals to consummate their relationship at the troughs, I do not know. It doesn't tell us. The upshot is that Laban comes out and he looks at all the young stock, and most of it's Jacob's. Well, this isn't right, Jacob. We're going to change things. Now, this is over a period of 6 years. So you'll understand that the changes happened 1.5 times a year. He says, Jacob, all the striped ones, that's all you're getting. The rest, the ring straight and the grizzled, are mine. I'm saying that because that's really what Jacob said. You changed it. And so the next breeding season, he comes out, and the most of them are Jacob's again. Jacob, that's not right. There's something wrong. Okay, you get the grizzled, I'm getting all the rest. And he keeps doing this year after year. And Jacob plays another little thing. I don't understand it really because I'm not in the business. But he bred the strong ones to the strong for himself. And he bred the weak ones to the weak ones for Laban. And he seemed to be able to determine what the produce was. Now, there's no natural ability in man to do that. God had given them a promise. God was carrying it out. Listen to this. When it seems impossible to man, God can work for His glory. That's why in Isaiah chapter 46, not speaking of Jacob, but speaking of the nation, God says, Israel, my glory. This people, who were the least among the nations, who had many bad starts, who were given in their lifetime to idolatry, God looks at them as a whole and says, Israel, my glory. Because the purposes of God are going to be carried out in Jacob. And God's preparing him to leave Haran and go back to the land. And he's going back in prosperity. We're going to look at 7 principles before we finish, and that's really one of them. God says, I'm going to be with you until my purposes are carried out. Remember Bethel? And God's purposes in you and I will be carried out, sometimes in spite of me. I may pay a price for God's purposes to be carried out. Jacob discerns that the environment is changing. It's time he left. But He does something I really don't think was right. But I can see human nature in it. He meets with his wives, the two principal wives, and he says, it's time we went. God's told me to get out, and I have to go. God had told him to go back to the land, and it's time now to go. But I'm afraid of your father. So a propitious moment, when Laban is away 3 days' journey, shearing the sheep, way in the country in Syria, Jacob gathers all his people together. Now remember, this, by this time, there's 12 in his family, children. There's 4 wives. There's himself. There's all his servants. There's camels. There's oxen. There's sheep. And there's goats. And there's asses. He's able to give over 500 animals to his brother Esau. So you just think in your mind the many thousands of animals that he had. I was just talking to Richard the other day, and we're just wondering how many we'd have, but a lot of those animals would be sold. And so he needed camels, and they were very expensive, and so he would sell sheep for camels. He needed asses, and so on. And the money he got, he would hire people to look after his sheep, people to work in the tents, and he landed up having a large following. It's amazing just how groups build up when God's with you. And God was with Jacob. That's what God promised, wasn't it? He says, I'll be with you. And all the way back through those 28 years, he was back and God was with him. Now, just one point. There's so many things in this, I could probably speak for a week on it, but I'm not going to. Jacob gets the blame for there being no altar in Padan Aram. Now, I pointed out last week, in the 77 years he was with his father, in Gerar, Lahiroi, and Gerar, and Beersheba, there was no altar for Jacob. Why? Because his father had an altar. You remember when Isaac came back to Beersheba, he built an altar. And Jacob worshipped at his father's altar. Now Laban wasn't an ungodly man. And Laban recognizes when God speaks to him. Remember, don't touch Jacob. Laban recognizes that he was being blessed. He says he did it by divination. He recognizes that he was being blessed by God. It's quite probable that Laban had an altar. It wasn't entirely an idolatrous family. And it doesn't say he had an altar, but it's quite probable he did. And if that's so, that would give us reason to understand why Jacob did not have an altar. Let me explain. When Jacob leaves Laban, and after he's finished with Laban, he sacrifices in Mount Gilead. He offers up a sacrifice. Now, if he was going to be true to his promise, down the road he was going to have to offer up a lot of sacrifices, 1/10 of his goods. So Jacob was not without knowing God. God spoke to him at least twice at Padan Aram. Once he told him to get back to Bethel, back to Canaan. The other time he gave him the information about the animals. So it's not an ungodly scene. There are records that are not there because something else may be happening. So let's not say that Jacob was away from God in that 20 years. The Bible doesn't say it. It just doesn't give us the record. It might be right. His heart may have been far away from God. But he came from Bethel from his experience with God, and a few weeks later he was in Padan Aram. Now he's fleeing. And Laban's coming after him. Laban was 3 days in one direction, and Jacob was 7 days another direction. So it took 10 days. So 10 days traveling, probably on camel, fast riding riders. They may have been 250, 300 miles away by this time. I doubt it. I don't think he could travel with the animals that fast. But that's what some suggest. It was maybe just 150 miles. Quite a distance away in the mountains of Gilead. And up comes Laban. But God had spoke to Laban. Now here's an encouragement for you and I. Out there, there's a world that hates God. Out there's a world that will seek to destroy the people of God. God will preserve us. God will keep us according to His purposes. Now there are times when God will allow things to happen in our lives. And that's for His glory. That's what we call the chastening hand of God. Hebrews chapter 11, chapter 12. God is molding us and making us into the men and women that He wants us to be. Something that's going to work the peaceable fruit of righteousness to them that are exercised thereby. That's what's going to happen in the life of Jacob. You know the last thing we learn about Jacob? Not the entirely last thing, but just about it. Genesis chapter 48. He worships leaning on his staff. That's the man down in Egypt. In chapter 49, we get prophetic statements concerning his 12 sons that have stood the test of time. We get prophetic statements in chapter 48 concerning the sons of Joseph that have stood the test of time. And I suggest that the Spirit of God entered into the man. And those prophetic statements were under the guidance and control on the record of the Spirit of God and the Word of God. Move on. He's going to leave a way up here. And I've got to get him down around, where am I? Have I got the wrong one again? I want to come up around here. I have one more map I've got to get. Yeah, I've got on the top of this one. I'm just going to move on fast. He's going to come away down. No, that's not the one. I am getting mixed up. Too many. I have too many maps. Let me see. I want to get down to Peniel.
Peniel is on another map.
On this one?
Right.
So what happens when your eyes get like Isaac's? There we are. Out here, yeah. He's going to get down to Succoth and Peniel. Now on the way, he's going to meet with his brother Esau. Now how would you feel if a brother that you did wrong by, you wronged exceedingly, sufficient that your brother threatened to murder you the last time you seen him? As soon as he would have been safe enough, because Isaac lived till 180 years old. So Isaac's still alive. And if he'd thought what Esau said, when my father is dead, I'm going to kill him. Well, Isaac was still alive. Anyway, and God had promised him all the things he was going to do through him, and he would safeguard him and keep him. You ever been like Jacob? There's a circumstance coming up in your life that you're fearful of. And you've all the promises of God in one hand, and you've the fear of man in the other. What do you do? What have you done? You've maybe done like me sometimes. You've made provision yourself, not depending totally on the Lord. You've been there? Have you done that? You've been fearful and afraid when God had said, "Be not afraid. Don't be afraid of their faces. I am with thee. I'll strengthen you, keep you, comfort you, guide you, preserve you." But we get like Jacob and we get afraid. I'm not going into his dealings with his father-in-law, with Laban. Time's gone too fast for me. They erected a pillar and that. I'm going on from there. With Esau, he is afraid. He's coming with 400 men. Now it would seem that down in Seir, Jacob, the woman he'd married, her father was a great man, a chieftain, And he was probably, someone has suggested, he was probably the leader of a roving band of people that went about robbing caravans and this kind of thing. That may be true, it may not be. We are not told. That's just supposition on someone's point. He had 400 men. I don't know what you know about 400 men, but we don't get 400 at our conference. And if you get 400 men all on camels coming at you, what are you going to do? And as far as you know, there's no kindness in their coming. In order to appease his brother, he sent a number of different groups of animals, over 550 in all, a very good gift. And this, I'm told, is the culture of the people, is appeasement. You know, it's something we should learn, that, you know, the proverb says, a man's gift makes room for him. That's not spiritual gift. That's exactly what he's doing. He's sending a gift of appeasement. I have wronged you. Here is my gift. The upshot is that when his brother comes, he finds that God's been in Esau's heart long before he even saw the gift. And we find the brothers making up. We find that there's something happens that is good between the brothers. But before we get there, he's going to have another lesson from God. And he comes to Jabbok, over up here, just around here. Peniel, Jabbok, they're all about the same area. There's a brook there. And he sends all his family across the brook and he stays. And he does something I don't know of any man really doing the same again. He wrestles all night with God. Or God wrestles with him. And God says, I'm changing your name from Jacob. Now listen to it. When he left home, his father says, what's your name? He says, Esau. He says, Esau. God says, what's your name? Oh, you can't say Esau now. My name is Jacob. He says, I'm changing your name. You'll no longer be the supplanter. You're going to be the one who has prevailed. He wrestled with God and prevailed. And I'm going to change your name to a prince with God. It's repeated in chapter 35. You're a prince with God. God says, Jacob have I loved. God says, Jacob is a prince with God. God says, I will be with him. God says, I will keep him. That's the kind of man that Jacob was. But God says, Jacob, I'm going to leave you a memory. See, Jacob is a man with pillars. He likes to erect pillars. Remember that? He erected a pillar for his meeting with Laban, the final meeting. He erected a pillar at Bethel. He erected a pillar when his wife Rachel died, and he erected a pillar at Bethel again when he got back. He's a man of pillars. God says, I'm going to give you a memento, something to remember this meeting by. But it won't be a geographically located pillar. And he touched the sinew of his thigh, and he says, there'll be a mark in your body, there'll be a weakness in the flesh that will let you remember your dealings with me. Have you got a moment in your life when you had a dealing with God as a believer? Not talking about salvation. Talking about a day in your life when God brought you to an end of yourself. When you came to a realization that I have to make a change. When you came to a realization that there's more to life than a few sheep and wives and children. There's God to deal with. That's where Jacob was brought to. What a difference from the man who deceived his father and says, I'm Esau. Says, I am Jacob. And he says, I will not let you go until you bless me. He learned that the sufficiency of man was not in the flesh. He learned through experience that the sufficiency of man was only in God. We have to learn that in the assembly. God doesn't work by numbers. God doesn't work by orators. God doesn't work by money. God works with His power. With our submission to Him. And He'll take us in the path of His choosing and His pleasing. Remember that little verse? Dallas was so kind to look it up for me. God hasn't promised skies ever blue. But what He's promised is He's going to be with us and He's going to keep us. So he leaves his brother. They promise to meet again. They're not going to meet again until their father's death, until their funeral, until his funeral in Hebron. He doesn't really want to spend time with his brother. Now just let me elaborate for a moment. The Bible says, how shall two dwell together except to be agreed? And you cannot have a believer and unbeliever dwelling together in harmony. It does not work. And let me explain something to you, and I've seen it so many times. If I get the smallest, and the meeting is probably Ben, if I got Ben to come down here, you're not going to do it then, and asked him to pull me down and I was going to pull him up, guess who would have the easiest job? Ben. Because he's down there, and I'm an old man, and he can pull me down easier than I can pull him up. If you want in your life to associate with unsaved people, Jacob, if you want to spend your time with Esau, you will become like Esau. A man of the field. A man of the flesh. A man without God. A man armed for war. The war of this world. And Jacob never really. He says, you go on, I'll follow behind. I've got the flocks and the woman. I'll come slowly. Esau goes away, and Jacob goes his own way. Some sad things in Jacob's life yet. It comes to Succoth. Succoth is there. Just up by there. He comes to Succoth. And instead of making a beeline for Bethel, he was supposed to come back down to Bethel. He didn't do it. And there's about 8 years between when he left Padan Aram to when he finally comes to Bethel. He spends time in Succoth. He builds a booth. He buys land in that area. He seems to be setting himself up. Although really, if you understand animals, sheep, they eat grass. And grass only, I wouldn't like a flock of sheep in my yard. I'd shoot them before they got in. Because there'd be no yard left when they left. That's why some of the kings, when Israel were going through the wilderness, they didn't want them coming across their country. Could you imagine 2 million people and about probably 5 or 6 million animals coming across Manitoba? If you went up in there, you'd see where they'd been. There'd just be a big barren waste where they had been. So he's going to move again, but something bad happens. Shechem. He's got a daughter called Dinah. She goes out to see the people. Now, she may have been a young teenager. They married young, and she must have been young. Because remember that there's only, she was born near the end of the first 7 years, so there'd be 6 or 7 years, plus 4 or 5. She'd maybe be 12 or 13 years old. Not much older. She wasn't 20 years old or older. She hadn't been born 20 years. Do your math. She was a young teenager. She goes out among the people and she lands up being defiled. The young man's father comes to Jacob and he says, well, all's not bad. She says, we can form a relationship. Do you see the pressure on Abraham? Number one, Esau, you come with me. Not going. Now Shechem, let's form a relationship. Let's join together. You marry our girls and we'll marry your boys. God's mind is no. That's never the mind of God for His people to mix with the unsaved people. I'm probably the only one I ever hear saying this, and maybe people don't like me saying it, but I'm going to say it again. And I don't have any young people here, really. There's a few, not too many, but there is a few. I'm going to say it again. One of the tragedies in West End, I'm not trying to hurt anyone, I'm just stating facts, is being young believers associating with either believers not in our fellowship or with unbelievers. One between two. One of the tragedies in my life I've seen in my... I'm close to 70, but I can recollect at least 50 odd years, has been the same thing. And it was in our own family. My sister married an unbeliever. He died and she married a man in the assembly. She divorced him and she married an unbeliever. And it was tragedy after tragedy after tragedy. And the mind of God is not, that believers marry unbelievers. You understand that? That has never been the mind of God. And the Bible teaches against it. And the parents have got to work in their families that these things don't happen. And Jacob, he's now a little bit wiser maybe than the man that was at Beersheba 20 odd years before. And he says no. But tragedy is about to happen. Simeon and Levi, children of Leah, they're incest against what has happened to their sister. They probably say their father has no backbone. And they get everyone circumcised, and when they're in the pain and weakness of circumcision, they murder all the men. And Jacob says, "You've made me to stink in the land." And he gets out. Tragedy in his life. And it seems to be recurring. And he has to leave. He finally goes back to Bethel. And there he meets again with God. There he erects an altar. And there he erects a pillar. Now my time is gone, just about, and I want to, from there I'll just tell you where he goes. He's going to see his father's burial down at Mamre. He's going to visit with his father for a few years. He's going to land up going down to Beersheba. Away down, he goes right down, there is, Beersheba's away down under here. There's where his father was, he goes down to Beersheba underneath here. And from there, God takes him down to Egypt. And God gives him the promise to come down to Egypt. His life is changing from there on. From when he comes back to Bethel, things seem to look up. Apart from a little bit of a problem with one of his boys, Reuben. And what Reuben did to Bilhah has got far-reaching repercussions for Reuben. And when you come to 1 Chronicles chapter 5, you learn this, that the right of the firstborn was denied Reuben because of his sin, and it was given to Judah for the leadership. The firstborn, the double portion, which should have went to the firstborn, the double portion went to Joseph, to his two sons. And if you read chapter 6 and 7 in 1 Chronicles, you'll find that the priesthood went to Levi. So everything that was associated with the firstborn, the blessing, the land, the double portion, the leadership, the priesthood, it was all split up. Priesthood to Levi. The leadership to Judah, the double portion to Joseph, and because of Reuben's sin. And it's amazing the repercussions of one man's failure. You know this, there's many assembly, and I know one right now in Fife in Scotland. Because of what one man did, whether he was right or wrong, there was two men involved. Because of what happened, that assembly closed its doors. An assembly of about 30 or 40.
It closed its doors, and it's no more. And there's never been, for the last 30 odd years, a testimony in that location. Anyway, on he goes, and he goes back down, and he lands up in Egypt. I'm not going to have time till I find my notes here on the seven principles I want to deal with. Sorry, I can't keep going. I'm too long-winded. We'll manage. Number one, if anyone acts contrary to the revealed will of God, which Isaac did, he cannot count on God to direct him in his actions. Isaac made a decision. You go and get that flesh that I love, and I'm going to bless you. And it took the deceit of Jacob to change things around. I know. Is that what you want? I could do that. I could go back to Bethel, the last stop at Bethel, and go on from there. Do what I'm told.